Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 160, fun titled. We got two segments for you this week. First up is a discussion on the new Zelda Wii U footage, and then after that is a replay of our Nintendo News Report YouTube segment. Also, we are preparing to record our Best Smash Bros. Music segment soon, so if you've got a favorite track you want to submit, you can send it to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Enjoy the episode.
Hey, I'm Neil Ronahan from Nintendo World Report, here to talk to you about The Legend of Zelda on Wii U, or at least the footage that we saw at the Game Awards very recently. With me to talk about that with you is John Raritan.
Hello!
So I guess kind of the best place to start with this is looking back a little bit from what we first saw of The Legend of Zelda Wii U back at E3 2014, which, granted, wasn't that much.
Right.
But what Anuma was talking about, Eiji Anuma, the Zelda uber producer, if you will.
The god of Zelda.
Yes. He's been in that position since, I guess, Wind Waker.
Majora's Mask, I think.
Well, Majora's Mask he directed, but I think Wind Waker he like took over, like he was the leader of the Zelda
right,
team.
Right, right, right.
Or maybe even after that, because, I mean, I guess going on a slight tangent, like Nintendo kind of broke up into their current group structure, I think right around early mid-2000s. I think when Iwata came in.
Yeah.
Then they had, like, basically there was the Zelda team, there was EAD Tokyo, there was, you know, the Iguchi team and the Kano team and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But but we're actually, I'll tease it, probably in the new year. We're going to be talking a whole lot about the Nintendo teams.
Yes.
That should be a good time. But back to Zelda. What Anuma said in that E3 video was how he wanted to go back to the roots of the original Legend of Zelda and bring back that kind of open world exploration idea that was there that got lost as they went to the 3D games.
Mm-hmm. Even into Link to the Past, that's already started to wind down.
Yeah, because I would say Zelda 2 is probably the last one that is just like, I don't know, man, wander around, get lost.
Exactly, yeah.
Because definitely, I mean, the original Legend of Zelda, and I actually just recently played through all of the original Legend of Zelda bits in Ultimate NES Remix, which I guess isn't a true representation, but it is like, I mean, it did kind of remind me of the scope of that game, which was just kind of like, oh, here, like, go find your way around, good luck.
Yeah, no, like, if you're lucky, you'll at least find the sword first.
Yeah, I mean, I still have trouble going back to that game, and I think it might be a little bit because I didn't necessarily grow up with the original Legend of Zelda,
mm-hmm.
but it's a game that, like, I can find where the first dungeon is, and then it starts to get real fuzzy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's not a lot of clues, like, it's a lot of aimless wandering, but...
And that's how it's, I mean, Miyamoto's talked about, you know, he wanted that game to be something where kids would talk about it with their friends, and they would find out things together. Yeah. So.
And it's funny in a way because I think that style of game has kind of come to popularity in recent memory with like roguelikes being a bigger deal in Minecraft and Dark Souls and all that. But now Nintendo's trying to bring it back to its roots. And the one thing that from looking back at that E3 2014 footage, which is basically just Anuma talking and then them showing a really badass fight, is Anuma made the comment that the puzzle solving is going to begin in Legend of Zelda on Wii U the minute where you figure out where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really interesting because what they showed off at the Game Awards was just that.
Exploration-based puzzle solving.
Yeah, like how do you feel about that in your Zelda game?
I stink and love it. I mean, this feels like maybe what Anuma was trying to get to with Skyward Sword but couldn't just because of technical limitations. Because he talked a lot in that early on, he made comments about wanting the world itself to be a puzzle.
Yeah.
And
which, I mean, they attempted that, but I think they failed. And while I love Skyward Sword, it's like, I mean, I reviewed Skyward Sword and I gave it a 10 out of 10. I would give it a 10 out of 10 again. I adore that mm-hmm. game. But in what they set out to do, they didn't execute on it totally.
No. Yeah, and that's... And I mean... I would say that some of that could go toward just system limitations. I mean, there's only so much you can do on the Wii.
Yeah.
But
I think a little bit of it also was design, because they wanted... I mean, the Wii, you could tell with a lot of Nintendo games from that era, is that it's not like they're totally dumbed down, but they're meant to be more inviting because of the market that they wanted to appeal to.
Yeah.
Fortunately, with the Wii U, they're like, we lost that market. We had it. We don't have it anymore.
The only market we have is Nintendo fans, so let's just do whatever they want.
Yeah. Yep. And that's, I mean, keep on doing that. Give us Metroid. Yeah, give us everything.
Yeah, it works for me.
Everything we want. But yeah, I mean, I'm very excited by the potential of having this big open world exploration in a Zelda game, and especially with what they did in Link Between Worlds, which definitely seemed like kind of testing that feature to an extent. I want to see more of it because I think that could be really, really special.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to the top of a cliff and look out over and then set a waypoint and then take my horse there.
Yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, what do we think about, like, that area that they showed off? I mean, it was very empty, but my feeling with that is that it's probably more of, like, a demo/vertical slice than it is, like, this is where the game's at totally.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think, I mean, even from, like, from a technical standpoint, there were definitely some issues with bad texture mapping and things in that. Like,
yeah, which is why they showed it off screen.
Right, right. And then why we zoomed it in like jerks.
Which, I mean, us being jerks is that also when you zoom in on a screen like that, it does not look good.
Yeah.
We actually, I guess some little inside baseball, whenever we do record, like, you know, Nintendo games or Wii U games and stuff at different events, if we can get direct feed, then obviously all is fair game. But if it's on the TV, we have to include the player or else they get really mad. Because then it, like, gives you that perspective, whereas you could just zoom in on the TV and it would look like garbage.
But yeah, so it looked empty, but it looked varied. I was talking about this with one of my friends. One of the issues that I had when Oblivion came out, the Elder Scrolls, what was that, 4?
That was the one Elder Scrolls game that I got super, super into.
Okay, yeah.
And I agree with you with what you're hinting at.
Yeah, it was every single area in there, you were either going over hills or in a canyon. There were no just open spaces where you could get a feel for where you were. And from what I've seen of this, it looks like you're not just stuck in one sort of terrain.
It looks
varied.
I would not be surprised if the area that we saw, like, I mean, that could be like the intro part, so to speak, because it does look like familiar and grass-like.
Mm-hmm.
But when they zoomed out to the bigger map, which it looked like what we saw was, I don't know, maybe conservatively like a sixth or an eighth of the entire game, if that.
I did a quick guesstimate. Just using the screenshot they showed of the really zoomed out map, and it looked like the distance between Link and the waypoint that Anuma set was about, like, you could set that waypoint about 11 or 12 times across the map.
Holy crap. Man, it's going to be beautiful. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like, we saw that grassy area, but then there's, like, I mean, we saw hints of mountains in the background, which that could be, like, a Death Mountain-like area. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's an ice area. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of water on that map, too, that they showed when they showed the gamepad.
Yeah.
And it looked like there might be some room for water traversal as well.
I noticed, one of the notes I made was that there are islands out in the water, and it looked like they had kind of, like, shallows and deep areas laid out in there. And so it looks like you can maybe get out to some of those islands.
Yeah, because they showed, I mean, there's a very clear delineation between, like, here's the light water, which you would assume that you can either, like, go take a boat out or just swim yourself. And then there's, like, the darker water, which that's probably just the invisible edge of the map that you can't go past.
Right.
But, I mean, and even inland, there's a lot of lakes and rivers all throughout, which, I mean, that could just be, you could have something like Hylia just kind of show up. Or you could have almost Wind Waker light exploration going across to those islands.
Well, and when you look at even the lakes in perspective to, like, how big that waypoint is that they set.
Huge.
Those lakes are gigantic. There's plenty of room for water exploration just within the lakes, let alone the ocean.
And, I mean, given the series history with stuff like Hylia, and any other time you used iron boots, there could be a dungeon in there.
And there will, and it will be annoying.
Yep, probably. I mean, that's the way water dungeons work.
Yep.
Some other stuff that we saw, the sailcloth showed up, which that was in Skyward Sword. It's also kind of in Wind Waker, although I guess it's the least.
Do you buy into the whole Legend of Zelda timeline at all?
I'm not up to date on to where this is supposed to be rumored to take place.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't said anything.
Yeah.
There's just been some speculation now since since Link seems to have the sailcloth, somebody pointed out that maybe it takes place, maybe it's a direct sequel to Skyward Sword. And the reason the world is so barren is because they haven't settled in it completely yet.
Yeah, I think I've heard what the Zelda timeline people refer to as the Age of Prosperity.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess it's, because what, it's Skyward Sword, and then I guess the next one after that is technically like Four Swords?
Yeah, one of the ones nobody cares about. Yeah.
Yeah. but it's like, yeah, it's the Vati line is before then we go to the three splits, at least according to the official Nintendo timeline.
Yeah.
But I think maybe not a direct sequel to Skyward Sword, but like kind of the next major game, the next major adventure after that.
Mm-hmm.
Because Skyward Sword does end, for anyone who hasn't played that yet.
Spoilers.
It does end kind of like, okay, now we're going to this new world and we're going to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And I don't think we'll necessarily pick up being like, I don't know what to do. But it'll be like, hey, we tried to figure out what to do. Here's our attempt. Now here's evil.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's demise or maybe we'll see, I don't know, some kind of rebirth of Ganondorf or something, or I guess pre-birth, because technically,
yeah,
Ganondorf wouldn't be around yet, but well, but he's demise.
Demise Ganondorf, it's all, it's the incarnation of evil, yeah, or whatever, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Some new incarnation of evil, yeah, will likely show up and wreak havoc. some of the villains that we saw, I mean, we just saw, it looked like Moblins, or Bokoblins, I forget.
Yeah.
It's almost like it depends on the specific design.
Yeah.
I think Bokoblins might be the official name.
I think those are the small, impish ones, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm cool with that. I mean, the combat, we didn't see too much of what it would be outside of being on a horse.
Right.
But it seems like that's what they're playing up a lot. I mean, even we saw the cool hopping off the horse and shooting the bow and arrow in midair.
Who would have guessed that that early E3 footage of him shooting the arrow, yeah, in slow motion was actually a complete giveaway of some of the combat?
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I was going back and watching that E3 2014 footage and being like, they just laid it all
right
out.
Yeah.
Like, the Game Awards, nothing in the Game Awards trailer was really, like, anything groundbreaking.
Right.
Because we already saw
it. We just
it.
Didn't realize that they were telling us that, yeah, yeah.
Although the one thing that they haven't really, I guess, answered is when Link does do the cool launch off the horse and firing at that badass enemy in the E3 footage, mm-hmm, like the arrow kind of does something weird where like the head of it like becomes like a light arrow or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But maybe the kind of hook of this will be something to do with maybe a bigger focus on the bow and arrow. Maybe there's some kind of legendary arrow. I don't know.
Or like some sort of customization you can do, like upgrades,
yeah,
that you can buy. And
yeah. And that seems to be in line with what we've seen in recent Zelda games, the whole idea of upgrading your enemy or your weapons and items.
Speaking of a little bit of weird customization and things, this is the only Zelda trailer that we've seen where they stink and just refuse to show Link in a green tunic.
Yeah.
Which I,
yeah,
thought was,
I mean,
weird.
Yeah, he's wearing the blue thing again.
And I kind of wonder if maybe they're just going to, I don't think they would abandon it completely, but I wonder, maybe a large portion of this game takes place without it, or maybe he can wear other things or something like that, or, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so far they've been pretty consistent in showing that blue outfit that he's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure it's a he as well. I know there was all that stuff at E3, which I think was just a lot of, like, mistranslation / not, like, Anuma kind of making, like, being, like, I don't know, we haven't said either way, and people being like, it's a girl!
Right, yeah, I think Anuma was just kind of trying to make a joke, and everybody took it extremely seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was also the same E3 where Ubisoft said they couldn't animate women.
Dude, it's so hard. Telling you.
It's tough. Them curves, like, it's weird. But it seems like the Link in this game will be a male. But yeah, the whole green tunic thing is a little weird. But it could also be, like, they want to hold that reveal for later,
yeah,
on or something.
Yeah, the first big real trailer.
Yeah, which I assume might not. Well, I don't know.
It pretty much, it has to be at E3 this year.
Yeah, I mean, like, it'll definitely be at E3, but will we see anything before then is the bigger question. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see something. I mean, who would have thought they would have shown it off now?
Right. I mean, if they were going to show something, I would think they would show it probably before Christmas, to try and get any extra Wii U sales they can.
I mean, which they did.
Sure, yeah, I'm just thinking, yeah, I'm just thinking any additional trailers, I don't see,
yeah,
them doing before E3, because what do they have to gain from it?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was, like, maybe there's a direct in February or March.
Yeah.
Where they talk a little bit more about it, maybe there's not a full trailer, or maybe our land Majora's Mask's launch too.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll probably, with, because the new 3DS will probably be coming out sometime in the first half of next year, so.
It could be March 13th, alongside Codename Steam, who
that
knows?
Maybe, yeah. So, I mean, I'm imagining that'll be beginning of the year, that's what they'll talk about once everybody's bought their kids the original 3DS.
Yeah.
Here's this new thing you can have.
And will revolt. Yeah. Buy it for your kids. Go. So I'm trying to think of anything else from the trailer. I mean, we did hear Miyamoto talk about how there's fruit, there are insects in the world and fruits on trees that you can apparently eat the fruit. I guess that's cool. And the insects, I imagine that will be, you know, a collectible thing like we've seen in past games.
He did talk, and maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but that's the whole point of doing trailer analysis.
Exactly.
So when they were going through that area with the trees, the way he said it, he said there was fruit growing here last time.
Yeah.
And so I sort of wonder if maybe there's some sort of, like, seasonal rotation or something going on. Like,
well, there's also, I mean, there is a day-night cycle.
Definitely, yeah.
Because I made the comment about, like, oh, it's sunset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then in the other, when they were going across the field, it was looked like noon. Like, it was very, very bright. So, yeah, I'm wondering if there's some sort of, like, time cycle thing going on.
And then we saw Minimal HUD as well, which I assume that'll mostly be on the gamepad.
Mm-hmm.
When you were off the horse, I don't think there was anything. And when you were on the horse, you just had the small thing in the right corner that, looked like
the action button and stuff.
Yeah. Like the A button to go. And it looked like, the R button was used for weapons.
Yeah.
And the L stick was used for movement.
One little interface thing I did make note of, as I was obsessing over the map. On there are a couple logos. There's one in, like, the bottom right corner that looks like it's probably an inventory. It just had, like, images of slots. And then under the zoom in and zoom out button, there was another button, with some sort of icon that I couldn't really make out, but it looked like maybe it had to do with, like, switching maps. And so I was wondering, like, there could be some sort of chart system.
Light world, dark world.
Or that.
Or charts.
Yeah, but I was just wondering if there was, like, a chart system where, you know, you could find maps and then have to figure out where in this huge world that refers to, sort of like Wind Waker.
Yeah, I mean, I love that part of Wind Waker, especially revisiting it in Wind Waker HD.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome if they had, like, treasure maps and stuff. And maybe, I mean, that could even be something that they go down the line of, like, here, we're going to share this map on Miiverse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, find out where it is.
Sure.
There's a special thing in-game. And that could really, I mean, almost extend the adventure because it would give you a reason to kind of explore that world more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still going to be a Zelda game. We're still going to have a story. Sure. But maybe they can make it more of that persistent world that you kind of want to screw around in.
Do you think, I mean, like, Skyrim went the route of adding more of the world on the other side of the water. Do you think they might do that in Zelda and do some DLC?
Oh, man, I don't know. Like, I think that the way that Nintendo's handling DLC has been, like, the Fire Emblem one was kind of crappy a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was really cool, but it was, like, that typical, like, kind of nickel and diming you for minimal extra content. But what they've been doing with, like, Mario Kart and Hyrule Warriors and even Smash Brothers.
Or a new Super Luigi U.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like how they're doing DLC is kind of amazing.
Yeah, they're giving you a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah. I mean, even Luigi U, I think, what was it, $20 if you already had New Super Mario Brothers U?
Yeah.
You're getting an entire new adventure.
Yeah, it's like a whole new game.
I think it would really behoove them, and it seems like the way that they're trying to carry their minimal lineup, because, I mean, they don't have third-party support at this point, it seems like the way that they're carrying that into the new year is by having DLC and Amiibo.
Yeah, which is smart.
Yeah, because Q1 in 2015, it's still just, you know, Kirby and now Codename Steam, but then they have Hyrule Warriors DLC hitting.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be new Mario Kart tracks in May. There's going to be Amiibo coming out every couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be very smart that, like, okay, let's say this Zelda game comes out next November, as I would assume is when it would come out if they're actually going to do this whole 2015 thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll see, like, here's, like, another island to explore, like a DLC pack coming out in May.
Yeah, that would be a good way to deal with, you know, them, since they don't have that third-party support, finding smaller ways to not make entirely new games, but to make the games they have last a lot longer.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess other stuff with the Zelda Wii U footage that we've been looking at, Miyamoto made a comment during it about how, oh, looks like you're near a dungeon.
Yes.
Where there was, like, these two, like, rock outcroppings that looked like they had some kind of design on them that you can't really see because it's crappy quality. but it looks like they're building off of the concept in Skyward Sword, which I adored, where, you know, the dungeon doesn't just begin when you get into the dungeon. Like, there's, like, the kind of the dungeon begins when you get to the area.
Yeah.
Which was something that I thought was one of the strongest parts of Skyward Sword, because it just kind of made everything very cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, I just remember that pirate ship dungeon that you went on. Like, I didn't realize it was a full-fledged dungeon until I was halfway through it and got a boss key. And it was like, oh, wait.
I've been in a dungeon this whole time, yeah.
Yeah, everything just flowed so organically.
Yeah.
And I really hope they continue that. Like, just kind of exploring the world and get lost in it. And then, oh, I'm fighting a final boss, and I got a weapon and a piece of whatever mystical thing.
Right.
I'm looking to collect.
Yeah.
Link also, like, ganks a horse in this trailer, too.
Yeah, I noticed that he just, like, owns a horse that he's going by.
Yeah. Which, like, it's the kind of thing, like, maybe it's, like, that Uncharted 4 footage that came out where, like, during it, it just, clipping just broke and Nathan Drake fell through the map. Maybe that was just this, but it's, like, that was live gameplay.
Yeah.
This was a pre-recorded thing.
Maybe Anuma just has a really sick sense of humor.
Yeah. Maybe Anuma's just like, you know, we have a pony in the game, but I really hate horses.
Yeah. Well, after having to program their AI for, I'm sure, a very long time, he probably does hate horses.
Yeah, I mean, and the horses do look beautiful, I have to say. And I like the idea that there's kind of wild horses out there as well. I mean, maybe...
Maybe you'll get to pick your own horse.
Yeah, maybe you'll be able to, like, tame horses, or maybe those are... Maybe enemies will hop on those horses and you'll have to fight on horseback.
This can finally be the horseback combat that Twilight Princess almost was.
Yeah, I mean, Twilight Princess was the biggest tease...
Oh, yeah.
It's like, here's something really cool. It's going to come back near the end, maybe.
Yeah, there's like two spots in the game where you actually have to do it. The one other big thing I wanted to mention, on the map itself, when they're zooming in and out, there's the icon for Link, and there's the icon for his waypoint. There are actually two other icons on the map that are resizing with those two icons.
Ooh.
Like position markers, and I didn't notice it until like right before we started recording. So like behind Link... There's one that looks like maybe a building, like that's like a town or something.
Yeah, maybe that's your home.
Yeah.
And maybe you can like warp there or something to save, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And then just a little bit in front of Link, there is another kind of arrow type icon that looks similar to Link, and maybe that's Epona.
Yeah.
But then the other thing is once he's actually walking up to Epona, as the camera pans around, you do get a quick glimpse kind of into the valley below. And it looks like there might be some sort of, like, house or something down there. There are torches along the walkway.
Yeah.
And that's really, besides those dungeon things, the only sign of civilization I can see in the entire map so far.
I mean, maybe it's just, it's an untapped land that they're kind of exploring.
And people are just kind of spread out.
Near the end of it, when Link's just kind of randomly roaming around as Anuma and Miyamoto are just like, Star Fox, Majora's Mask. They do kind of show like what looks to be some sort of like giant gate in the background.
Yeah.
That maybe that leads to, you know, some kind of stronghold or something, because it doesn't look like there's like a castle there.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's blocking off something.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what that something is.
Yeah, there needs to be more footage of this game right now. I would even be, I'd be happy if they just gave us, like, direct feed footage of what they had just played. Like, I just want to see it better.
Yeah. We'll probably have to go to Japan to get that.
Yeah.
I imagine that the Nintendo folks in America only have what they were given.
Probably.
All right, well, I think that just about does it for our deep dive into The Legend of Zelda on Wii U with the footage that we've seen. Let us know what you think in the comments below. And maybe we'll do more of these for different trailers. I mean, there is some new Mario Maker and Codename Steam footage.
Uh-huh.
Although the Codename Steam footage would just be like, man, I don't know, this looks crazy. like you're Abraham Lincoln and like you're a lion.
Abraham Lincoln
and you're firing guns.
The lion from Oz and Tom Sawyer.
Yeah.
Like, what the? Okay, Japan.
Yeah, pretty much.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, maybe we will have to talk about that. Just like drink a lot before. But yeah, let us know what you think. If you have any theories about Zelda on Wii U, we'd love to hear it. But thank you so much, and talk to you all later.
Bye.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the first episode of Nintendo News Report, a new live show made primarily for Nintendo World Report TV's YouTube channel. During the show, we discuss recent Nintendo news as well as this week's new releases, reviving that classic newscast spirit. I'm your host, Alexander Kalafi, and I am joined by site director Neil Ronahan.
Hi everybody.
As well as connectivity podcast editor Scott Thompson.
Hello.
We're going to see how this show turns out. We got this cool structure. We got top story at the top of the show that we're going to discuss the one big story that we're all dying to talk about. Then we got the new releases. There's a couple cool ones this week. And then at the end, we'll discuss the rest of the news, which has some cool ones. You'll want to stick around until the end because we have NPD discussion. That sounds like a show. So let's get started. Neil, I know you're so excited to talk about this. Amiibo Wave 2, show us what you got.
Well, first off, I got Little Mac right here. This is today's purchase. Say hi. Okay, now I'll stop being an asshole. So the whole Amiibo thing is kind of insane at this point. To be blunt, here's the skinny on Wave 2 right now. Live field report. Half of Wave 2 is delayed until the end of the month. Originally, it looked like it was all going to come out like this weekend, although Toys R Us and I think some other stores had a bunch of them out early. December 12th, which is tomorrow, was supposed to be the day when I think a lot of them were going to hit stores. I think some stores like Target were going to hold them for Sunday because that's when they have their weekly ads. And if they advertise something in the ads, they want to make sure they're actually there. So right now, the only Wave 2 stuff that's in the stores in America right now, it's Zelda, Diddy Kong, and Little Mac. It looks like Luigi, Captain Falcon, and Pit were part of some sort of shipment delay, maybe? Or that might have been a rumor, or not 100%. But those won't be coming out until it looks like after Christmas. I know I've gone full hog into this dumb thing, and I even have online pre-orders at Best Buy and Toys R Us. And all of the ones, not that I have multiple pre-orders for ones, but my pre-orders for Pit, Captain Falcon, and Luigi were all pushed back to December 30th. So
I want to ask what the end game for Amiibo is, but first I kind of want to know what your end game is. Because there's going to be up to 50 figures of this, including some real rough ones. Okay. So Lucario is the line.
He's
the line.
I might have talked about this on previous podcasts in which I said there's no way in hell I'm going to get fucking Diddy Kong. But what's up, everybody? I got Diddy Kong because I went to a Toys R Us. There was Zelda, and I went to go buy the Zelda. And they're like, oh, didn't you see Diddy Kong was there too? And I'm just like, okay, I'll go get it.
Fun fact, I checked Best Buy's website this morning because I have a $10 credit and I was considering using it to get an Amiibo tomorrow. Diddy Kong was the only one of the three I saw up, and it was like that one, Little Mac, and not Zelda. It's what was the third one? Either way, there was Luigi.
Okay.
Little Mac, and then... there you go.
Actually, when I noticed even too with the online pre-orders, I pre-ordered two at Toys R Us. Toys R Us currently has a buy one get one 40% off deal going on if you want to take advantage of that. But I pre-ordered Little Mac and Pit, and then immediately after I did that, when I went to go, I was going to like send the link to someone else, and the Little Mac page was taken down. This is insanity. And the worst part about it is that all the statements we've gotten from Nintendo, which I have an editorial up on the site called The Disappointing Scarcity of Amiibo, in which I go into kind of full detail on all of this. But the worst thing about it is the comments from Nintendo kind of don't really give you a solid answer as to whether or not we'll see some of the hard-to-find ones ever again, like, you know, Marth, Villager, and Wii Fit Trainer.
Why is Villager hard to find?
Yeah, I mean, like, the Marth
like
one...
top five Nintendo franchises sales-wise.
Yeah.
Probably top five...
But that's the worrying thing, is that there's all these threats of discontinuation, and are we going to see these figures again? Who knows at this point? And it's not even like, oh, you had like a month or two to buy them. Like, you had a weekend, and if you didn't get Marth that weekend, you're pretty much shit out of luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And I think this probably speaks to the greater problem of what Nintendo wants to do with Amiibo, because this like stock issue almost seems to speak to a greater issue, which is Nintendo isn't sure what it wants with Amiibo. It has like a lot of little ideas, and I consider Smash a little idea, even though it has a larger implementation.
I mean, it was a last-minute idea. Like, we know right. that for sure.
It seems like it exists for the sake of existing, and this stock issue only accentuates that, if anything.
Yeah. I mean, like I think Sakurai even said it like that. It was like this year, Nintendo was like, hey, we want you to come up with a way to do this. Let's go.
They had to use that NFC port for something.
Yeah. I mean, but it seems, I mean, that's the thing that's so troublesome is that you have Disney Infinity and Skylanders who have like done this and done it successfully already. And it looks like Nintendo just like only tried to learn from themselves, which is kind of typical Nintendo in a way. But it looks like they saw Pokemon Rumble Blast and were like, oh, we'll just do that, but with a slightly bigger scale. It won't all be at GameStop. And then the one kind of the conclusion that I reached is that Amiibo is only for one console, whereas Skylanders and Disney Infinity is for everything.
Well, it's going to be for two consoles, and then it's also going to be more than figures, probably starting next year.
Yeah. Which would make sense, because that's easier to, I guess, get out there and have shelf space.
Right, they want as many people as possible to use that Square port on the Wii U and eventually the 3DS, and playing cards are probably going to be the way to do it, which will mean Nintendo's going full circle. They're starting as a playing card company, and then they'll be doing playing cards as their latest thing starting next year.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's just, it's like kind of sad because this has just become like a crappy collector's market now. And because of all this stuff with like ones being hard to find, it's just going to drive up scalping and collectors more.
And I'm very curious to see how the competitive market is affected by this, because as I was saying earlier, the fun fact that I never got to, Diddy Kong was the only one sold out of those three I saw this morning, and I think the reason is, on Japanese tier lists, Diddy Kong is the highest ranked character in Smash Bros. Or at least, maybe 4chan was lying, maybe he's secretly really terrible, but the last tier list I saw, Diddy Kong was at the very top of the Wii U tier.
I know, I played against some very good Diddy Kong players, so I would right. believe that he is one of the best for sure.
I'm going to start playing against a very good Diddy Kong. He's, right here.
What are you going to nickname him?
I don't know.
Kitty Kong?
Shitty Kong. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole Amiibo thing. I guess the scarcity, at least for, you know, those three that you mentioned, the Wii Fit Trainer, Marth, and then the Villager, doesn't really bother me because, A, like, pretty much everyone I know who wants to collect these things got it the first weekend. And then, B, like, these are kind of fringe characters. Like, if someone is just going to get a Wii U, like, this Christmas or next year, I kind of don't feel like those are the characters they're worried about. So you should make more room for Luigi and Diddy Kong and more, and Zelda even, more kind of well-known characters. And then bring those back later if there's reason to bring them back. You know, if there's games they can use them.
Then Nintendo needs to be upfront about that. I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, you say that they could bring them back, but, like, we don't know that.
Well, no, we don't know, but I've heard a lot of people say, like, well, what about when Fire Emblem, you know, and Shin Megami Tensei comes out, you know, but now no one's going to have Marth. But you got to believe, like, if that game is going to support Marth as an amiibo, they're going to reprint Marth, because they're not going to make any money off of people just selling them for crazy amounts of money on eBay and stuff. Yeah. I mean, they want to have it out on shelves because they know people will buy it then. So I think there's a rhyme and a reason to this. It doesn't really bother me, I guess. Everyone who collects these things, like, I mean, I guess I don't know a lot of people who are crazy for collecting, but Neil, you have the whole first wave, don't you?
Yeah, you know why? Because I haven't been taking a lunch to relax. Like, I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, really, like, I probably wouldn't have Marth if I didn't go to, like, five fucking stores last week or the other week. Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's not like it was just like, oh, I went to a Toys R Us and they were all there. It's like, no, like, I wrote a feature about how I went to like seven stores. I had to order the Marth online and pick it up at a Target that was out of the way on my way.
Yeah. And it sounds like most stores would probably order Marth by accident, thinking they would be ordering the entire first wave of Amiibos just because it's Nintendo, while a lot of other stores did what was probably the smarter thing and just not getting Marth at all. Like, you can't really blame a lot of retailers for not getting the Marth one in.
I think some of it might be, and this is, I don't know that much about toy shipments, but it's like you'll have a box or a case, in which there will be, like, let's say there's, like, you know, like 10 Marios, 10 Links, 5 Villagers, and 5 Marths or something. Or maybe it's even smaller numbers than that. But that's kind of what you're dealing with more. And I think it's when you get to reordering, if that's even possible, which, once again, we don't know. Like, that, all the Marths that were made, they could have already been made.
Word! All right. That's good. Let's move on to new releases. We got another thing Neil is excited to talk about. Zeo Drifter.
Yeah, so Zeo Drifter is the new game from the Mutant Muds developer, Renegade Kid. It is a Metroidvania-style game. I guess maybe just more Metroid-style game. It's very much old-school, like, 8-bit Metroid influence. And it's very fun. It's a little on the short side. It's very challenging. But I guess the one bad thing about it is that there's just the same damn boss over and over again. And they add different things to it that kind of go in line with the power-ups and abilities that you get. Since it is a Metroid-like game, you get different power-ups. Like, one of them is you turn into a submarine and can go in water. And one of them, you can shift from one dimension to the other is in, like stereoscopic 3D layers. And those are all fun and everything, and it's great moving around that world and exploring. And it's a little bit brutal, but that kind of makes it fun. And I know this will speak to what you love, Alex, but almost like in that Dark Souls kind of way where it's like, all right, I could stay here, but I want to get over there, but I might die. But fuck it, I'm going to do it anyway.
So there's a lot of repetitive death, but death where you gain a little bit every single time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, as in, like, you, like, gain levels or anything, but I mean, gain, like, you know
you gain
the
enemy personal
placement.
Experience.
Yeah, yeah.
right. The it's not necessarily always tangible experience you get in Dark Souls, because sometimes in Dark Souls you lose everything. But sometimes you also end up learning, like, okay, I know this enemy's right here. I know this is where I can post up to glitch the system a little bit and see where everything – That's good to hear. I have a question that's semi-related to Zeo Drifter, but more related to Renegade Kid. Where is Treasure Knots?
It's coming next, I think.
Okay.
The official story with that, I guess, and this is, I haven't really talked to Jules personally about this, but from picking up on Twitter and different things. So he was working on Treasure Knots, and I think development on that got kind of halted because then he started working on the Colt County Kickstarter, and that bombed. And yeah. I think he was really sad, as one would be when your Kickstarter fails. And then out of that, he started working on a kind of more simplistic Metroidvania idea because he just wanted to make a game. And then he started working on Zeo Drifter and kind of scoped it out and realized that he could finish it before the end of the year, whereas Treasure Knots, because Treasure Knots' scope had expanded, that would still take more time. So I think Treasure Knots is still – Treasure Knots is probably in, like, full development now because, I mean, Zeo Drifter's out. And I know Moon Chronicles, the remaining episodes of that, all got submitted to Nintendo, and that should probably be out maybe early January or something. Okay. He's probably working on Treasure Knots. Right, he could be working on it as we speak.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe. But I think Treasure Knots, the current time frame is probably, I don't know, like, sometime early next year, but that
the time
change.
Frame they originally planned on for this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what happened with Treasure Knots is that the scope expanded. It was originally supposed to be a smaller game, and then as time went on, they kind of wanted to add more to it because it was going to be a game where you died once and you had to start over, and then it kind of changed to be a little bit more than that, which made, you know, it changed the design of the concept of the game.
It was fun. I'm looking forward to it. How much is Zeo Drifter?
It is $9.99, which I think is a fine price, at least from the time that I put into it. I put in about three and a half hours. I didn't get to 100% completion, but I think it was at like 92 or something. And it's a fun little game. Like, I really like the ideas of it. It totally could have stood being a little bit longer. But at the same time, if I had to fight that stupid boss one more time, I probably would have been way more negative on the game.
Yeah, you should be thankful it ended when it did, I guess.
Yeah, you fight the boss 7 different times.
I'll probably get that during a sale. Like, 50% off is probably what I'll stick out for. But it's cool. I'm glad it's a good game. Phoenix Wright Trilogy is the other game we're talking about this week.
In that sweet, sweet future where I have free time, totally getting this because I want to replay the Phoenix Wright games real bad.
That's like, it's like 60 hours of gameplay easily, if not closer to 70 or 80.
I've beaten the first two. So, but then again, that was so long ago that I couldn't really tell you what happened.
Right. So the way this series works is, the reason they're releasing it as a trilogy is, as I'm sure you know, the story is one arc from the first game to the third game. There is stuff in the third game that resolves stuff that happened in the second and first game. And they're all standalone games. They can all stand on their own, but it's one main story, which is good here. They have completely forgotten Apollo Justice outside of the new game, though.
Yeah.
That's getting nothing.
Well, because he was in... I mean, he had a role in Dual Destinies, right? The fifth one?
Right. He's one of the two main playable characters alongside Phoenix. And then Athena, I think her name is, also gets a case of her own, maybe. But yeah, it's cool. Remastered visuals, 3D diorama effect. It's a straight collection of the OG trilogy. So there you go. It's $30 probably. I think $30. That's reasonable. Yeah,
$29.99. And you can read a review of it up on the site by Andy Gergen. I think he gave it an 8.5.
Nice.
Right, and also consider how these games used to be. Now, granted, they've been reprinted, and you can get them for, like, $20 each on Amazon nowadays, but when these games came out in, like, 2005, 2007 or whenever, copies of these games were fetching $50, $60, $70 at their home.
Yeah, I bought the original for $15 at a GameStop, played through it, lent it to a friend, saw how much it was going for online, then sold it for $40. So, I mean, at this point, I guess I kind of owe Capcom about $30 because that's how much money I made off of buying the first one.
Those are amazing games. That trilogy is absolutely incredible, and especially the third game. Don't start with it. Work your way up to it because the first two games are really great too. But the third game, like, I'm pretty sure James from RFN listed as one of his greats. And well-deserved. It is the best game in that series. All right, moving on to news. The first one is about the Game Awards from 2014. We just did a live podcast of that the other day, Neil, I, and Brian Rose. And it's been doing pretty well. Watch it if you want. So it did about 2 million viewers, more than 75% increase over the number of people that watched the finale to the Video Game Awards on Spike TV. The viewers watched an average of 28 minutes of the show. Of the 4,000 or so available seats in the venue, 3,000 were filled. About half of those were paid for $45 tickets. The rest were industry members. But more importantly, more interestingly, Kaylee didn't make money on the show, but he always knew it would be an investment. That's fair enough.
And I think he's very successful.
He says he's not sure on the details of next year's show, but 1 mil will, most likely take place, which is good because the more I think about it, the happier I am with the way
it was. A really enjoyable show. There were definitely some parts of it that were dumb and laughable, and it was kind of funny that it took them like 40 minutes to get to even one award. And I started, and then like the one time where like Keeley just finds Reggie off stage, and it's just like, young man, you guys are best developer of the year. Show this codename Steam trailer. Let's go. There were definitely things like that were goofy, but like I just enjoyed watching it, and enjoying watching it sometimes was making a little fun of it. But it was an enjoyable thing to watch, and that's even with that. Like if the Zelda footage wasn't there, I still would have I still would not have been mad that I watched the whole thing.
I thought it was
pretty good. Like it definitely wasn't as pandering as like the past video game award shows have been. Yeah. I thought it was pretty solid throughout. And I don't know if this speaks to like sort of the quality and prestige of this show versus past ones, or just to Nintendo kind of getting into gear. But having that Zelda trailer there was such a huge surprise and so amazing. And yeah, I don't know to think that they went from like, oh, Cranky Kong's playable in Donkey Kong to, oh, here's like an extended look at the next Zelda game. And oh yeah, we're going to just kind of drop in that Star Fox is coming too. And Majora's Mask will come out before it as well. I mean, that was huge. It was cool. It was a good show overall. I agree. It was like, couldn't tell if it wanted to be like an award show or like E3, like let's just show a bunch of trailers, but you know, whatever. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it, like, because I think you don't really want to call that anything else but the Game Awards, but it is at a point where, like, that tells a third, maybe half of the story, if that. But, like, is that really a bad thing? I don't think just a straight, like, hour-long award show would be fun at all.
No, I think Jeff Keighley had his heart in the right place here. He knows that people like award shows and that we like something that pays respect to the video game industry on a larger scale. But he knows that one of the great things about these award shows are the cool reveals that happen. Because if you remember, last year's VGX, outside of all the stuff people complained about that was justifiable and had to do with the content, people were kind of upset, including me, that the only real new reveals were No Man's Sky, which that's yeah. a whole discussion that's for another
Telltale
day.
Games.
And two Telltale games, Game of Thrones and Borderlands, which just released. Yeah. So now
and Game,
they have
Game
a
of
lot
Thrones
more.
Episode 1. It's pretty fun.
Do you like the show?
I've warmed to the show. Lauren's super, super into the show. So I finally relented last season and started enjoying it.
Okay, because this picks up after like one of the biggest spoilers in the series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you need to watch the first three seasons before you start this series.
So yeah, it seems like he took the award stuff. Maybe there should have been more awards and a little less commercials. Maybe.
He even admitted that in that press release that came out. He said like, yeah, maybe we should have had more focus on the awards.
Right. But his heart was in the right place. He's trying. And I think the more stuff he does, the more I kind of dig Jeff Keighley. Like just as a person. Yeah. Like even though, yes, sometimes he can come across as a bit of a shill, he's doing his best. He's doing his best to be the representative of video games in the mainstream industry. The mainstream society in general. Yeah. He's, like, in a lot of ways, the representative of video games.
He's the Ryan Seacrest of video games.
Right.
That's actually pretty spot on.
I think I've heard that before, but it just makes sense.
Yeah.
Like so let's get on to the biggest news of the week.
Well, actually...
Theater Rhythm Dragon Quest.
Okay. March 26th, 2015 in Japan. A Dragon Quest music, of course. No word on a release outside of Japan, and it is playable at the Jump Festa 15 in Japan on December 20th and 21st. I wish this was Pokemon, but it was going to be Dragon Quest. It was always going to be Dragon
Quest.
No,
definitely... I don't really know if a Theater Rhythm game outside of Final Fantasy will ever really be that amazing, but I'm willing to give this game a shot. And at this point, I'll probably get it regardless of whether or not it comes out in America, because I have a Japanese 3DS.
Well, you know,
I don't know if I will just rock a demo. It'll kind of depend on what I'm doing on March 26th, if I've drank it all, if I have like $40 to spend. That's what it's going to come down to, whether or not I get that on the Japanese system or wait for the maybe U.S. release, which I would actually kind of cast a line of doubt at.
I give it about 60% odds of hitting the U.S.
Yeah,
about 60%.
I think it'll come. You know, like, when I first heard this announcement, I was like, oh, well, this isn't really that exciting. Like, I've played a handful of Dragon Quest games, but I don't have an affinity for the music like I do for Final Fantasy. But going through both Theater Rhythm games... I mean, I haven't really played many of the like later Final Fantasy games, but it still gave me a big appreciation for the music throughout. So I think I'll still pick this up. There won't be as many songs I know off the bat, but just playing for a little bit, I think I'll come to appreciate like all the great music that I'm sure is in these games. So I'm ready to. I'm totally gonna jump on board if it comes to the U.S. And I'm just gonna keep my fingers crossed for a Chrono Theater Rhythm. that's what I'm holding out for. So.
All right, so I'll ask you guys this question. I've said many times that I would love a Pokemon Theater Rhythm. Neil, if you had to have a Theater Rhythm based on any franchise, what would it be?
Zelda.
Scott?
Well, like I said, the Chrono series for sure, but if it can be something that's not Square.
Anything ever. It doesn't even have to be a Nintendo system. Just get creative.
Get creative right on the spot. No, I Chrono for sure, and then I would almost love them just to do like Theater Rhythm Nintendo. It doesn't even have to be.
Yeah, I was gonna say Theater Rhythm Smash Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do something
like
that.
Have you heard that fucking music in the Wii U game? It's incredible.
It's so good. Yeah, I would be down for just like a bunch of great Nintendo tracks. For sure.
Word. And our final story of the night: the NPDs just came out. This is hot news. We almost probably should have led with it, but you know what? We're sticking it at the end. Smash Bros. Wii U and 3DS lands at number 3 of the NPD top 10. Pokemon Alpha Sapphire's number 5, Ruby's number 7. I'm a little surprised Alpha Sapphire beat Ruby because I assumed Ruby would be the cooler one. But no word on 3DS. Is 3DS okay, Neil? You seemed a little heated.
No, it is not. I'll say that emphatically. So there's a little rule of thumb with these press releases that companies release. I think probably the best example, well, I guess the best overall example is how for all those months when Microsoft would be like, Xbox One is the number 2 console in America, and not actually give numbers.
Yeah.
When, like, basically, like, if you get all the data, then that company is proud of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, with the Wii U, like, I think we found out it was a 10% boost from last year, which that's positive. We didn't get the exact number, and that's because the exact number is still kind of underwhelming. It looks like Wii U did about 240,000 in November. However, I think the week after Smash Brothers came out was the best sales week for the system since launch.
So
that's good. But then, on the other hand, both PS4 and Xbox One did around 1 million each. So Nintendo's still, I think at this point, Xbox One is assuredly outsold the Wii U.
Considering
that it sold more than 1 million in November.
Right, I was telling you this before the show, but Xbox totally earned this month, just marking the system down $70 and then including a game in those packages. You know what? It had a mission even more so than Sony, and it accomplished it.
Yeah, and I see a lot of people kind of being like, oh, it's going to hurt him in the long run, and I kind of disagree. I also don't think you're going to see that console go back up in price, but this is a Nintendo show. So I was using that Xbox One as an example. Also, let's talk about the 2DS for a second as another example of withholding information. So 2DS was announced. It was great. Like, this is for kids. It's going to be awesome. Then we never heard how the 2DS sold specifically. We heard 3DS sales. But then, like, when the 3DS XL came out, all the press releases would be like, and 30% of the sales were 3DS XL. We're really happy with that. You didn't hear anything about 2DS sales because it was disappointing. Yeah. So, ergo, when you don't hear about 3DS sales in one of the most important months of the year, then it's probably time to start worrying. And actually, time to start worrying was like a year ago. 3DS hardware sales are awful.
No, everyone's holding out for that new 3DS.
Honestly, that's not true. To both it's of you guys, do you think that'll move the needle at all? Like, I mean, maybe it'll stabilize it, but like right now, 3DS peaked. 3DS peaked a year ago.
It depends how they sell it. If they sell it alongside Majora's Mask and they do a good job of selling it, I think it could do pretty well, at least at first, before it ends up going this way. But
yeah. It seemed like Japan had a good, like, maybe it was like a month long where they kind of had boosted sales from the new 3DS, and then it kind of tapered off. And I have a feeling that's how it's going to be worldwide. And I think, in a way, Nintendo shot themselves in the foot by announcing new 3DS in one region and then not having it come out anywhere else. I mean, it came out in Australia and New Zealand. But not having it come out in North America and Europe means that the savvy buyer is going to be like, well, you know what, I'll just wait for the new one next year. I have a lot, and granted, you know, anecdotal evidence can sometimes be misleading and dumb. I have a ton of friends around my age that were all like, all right, I'm finally going to get a 3DS for Smash Brothers. Oh, there's a new one out next year. I'll just wait for that.
Yep.
Right, which is, that could be the biggest reason why the 3DS isn't doing so well right now, outside of not having that much compelling software. Actually, no, that's even a lie, because it has Pokemon, which did like 1.5 million units, and Smash Bros., which is still doing pretty hot. So I don't even think that's the problem.
I think 3DS has sold to just about everyone who wants one. You have, you know, a couple people withholding, but I think what Nintendo needs to do is keep on getting saps like us to buy the system over and over again, which is what they're going to do with the 3DS. Because really, I mean, they've tapped out that market, and they're sort of doing the same thing with Wii U, although I think Wii U has a lot more upward motion potential just by sheer fact that it hasn't been doing well at all.
Nowhere else to go.
I mean, like, Wii U slowly but surely is existing. It's not blown the doors off of everything, but like Smash Brothers sold really well. I think it was, it was combined Wii U and 3DS, but I think it was the third game in November, which that's awesome. But at the same time, I mean, Wii U sales are still kind of a bummer, but the games are selling. I think the percentage thing from the press release was that, like, game sales have increased, like, what was it, 70%, 80%, something like that.
There's a comparison to make between the Wii U and the Vita here, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm saying that in a very positive way, in the sense that right now the Wii U is not selling any units, and the Vita is literally not selling any units. But the Vita's software attach rate is amazing. Like,
yeah,
people who own
crazy.
Vitas buy video games on it all the time, even the ones who've had it since launch. I buy a Vita game, like, every month or two, thanks to sales, and then I bought Freedom Wars a little while ago. The attach rate is fantastic, and I think that's the future for the Wii U as well. People will still keep selling the Wii U, and it'll do well. It might even do very well once Animal Crossing and Zelda come out, but yeah. I think the Wii U's success is going to be in its software sales, not its hardware sales.
Yeah, and while I think Wii U will never have the same kind of indie support that Vita does, I mean, I think that Vita benefits a lot from kind of piggybacking on PS3 and PS4 as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Wii U will ever have that kind of indie support, but it will have indie support, and it does have indie support. And also, you're going to have a much better first-party lineup coming to Wii U as opposed to Vita, which, does Sony still make games for Vita?
Actually, well, a lot of this is partnerships. Like, they're putting out Revelations next year, and they got a lot of indie games. But there is a few Japanese to America translations and stuff. Like, there's some, it might be called Orishika or something. There's some game coming out next year, which is an RPG. There's another one coming out. And then, like, they're doing things like Disney Infinity. That's getting a Vita port. But the answer is no.
That felt a lot like a girl telling her friend, like, she needs to break up with her boyfriend, and she's like, well, no, there's a lot of great things about him you don't see.
Like, I mean, he did put out that one Resistance game, and, like, Tearaway was pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah, where's Resistance good. Burning Skies 2?
Nowhere.
Actually, here's a fun fact about the Vita. Sony Bend, as far as I know, did just put up a posting working on another AAA Vita title, which is probably Uncharted Golden
Abyss. What do you think Retro's up to?
Put Retro on anything. Put it on Crash Bandicoot.
If you guys want the most important sales data from this month, a friend of the show, Donald Terrio, chimed in to say that Sonic Boom on Wii U did about 25,000 copies, and the 3DS did worse than that.
The first version.
So there you go. So that was kind of supposed to save the Wii U and 3DS. I think we can place all blame there. So.
Yeah, I think if Nintendo gave Sega any money for that, they're probably like, what were we thinking?
Yeah, that, like, exclusive three-game deal kind of didn't work out. Yeah. All-Star Racing was good.
Yeah, but that wasn't part of the three-game deal.
That wasn't part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
What games were?
But that racing, well, I mean, for the four people who watched me do the live stream when the Wii U came out, Sonic Racing on Wii U was hilariously broken when it first came out. Like, there were a bunch of, like, cool multiplayer modes, and you just enter them and you just fall through the ground. And, like, then it would be like player 3-1 and be like, what happened? I don't know. They fixed it though. If you haven't played that game, you should play it. But the three games were Sonic Lost World, Sonic Boom,
and then Mario and Sonic.
Yeah.
Oh God, Mario and Sonic. Yeah. Wow, so I reviewed...
Sonic Lost World might have actually... Yeah, Sonic Lost World was the best game out of the three.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because I reviewed two of those three games, and they were in... I reviewed the 3DS Sonic Boom game and then Mario & Sonic at the Olympics, and those were both terrible. So, wow. I missed that.
All right, and then the final point before we close out the show. The sales of Amiibo are approximately equal to the sales of Super Smash Bros. For Wii U so far, while Link, Mario, and Pikachu in that order have been the best-selling figures to date. And I just want to say, I thought that order would have been reversed. Like, entirely, as in Pikachu outsells Mario, outsells Link. But apparently, Link as a character has a bigger fan base than Mario.
There's that fabled Marth no one can find. You know, I'm not surprised. Like, I think Link has a lot of cachet, and I think the Zelda franchise does too. And I think the reason we don't realize it as much is just because Nintendo's a little more careful with Zelda and don't usually release games quite as often. I know, like, we're getting distracted by these Amiibo dancing. you know, like, we had Link Between Worlds, and now we're getting the Majora's Mask remake, and then we'll have the new Zelda Wii U game. But for the most part, it's not quite, like, on the level of something like Mario or even Pokemon. So I think we just don't realize how beloved that franchise is, because it's just not quite out as out and open as much as those others. But
yeah.
And then selling as much as Smash Bros, that should mean that there's an attach rate of about 1 per person, but it really means there's an attach rate of 8 for about a third of the audience of Smash Bros.
Well, I was going to say, when you release all those amiibo and then you're saying, oh, it's selling as many as Smash Bros, that just means that, like, yeah, a fraction of the Smash Bros audience bought all of them, like our friend Neil Rotnahan here. Well, that reminds me, Alex, have you bought any amiibo?
I bought Smash Bros. Like last week. It's still sealed because I'm not home yet. But I also bought the Pikachu one with it, just because I wanted some amiibo and they didn't have the villager. Pikachu seemed like the right option. But it's,
I went. Like I just got Yoshi because Yoshi's my favorite, and like I knew I'd want to have that one just on my shelf when I'm not using it. And that's like where I'm at right now. Like I don't need any more amiibo until I know that like there's a game that's going to really use them. That's not an amiibo. Get that garbage out of here.
And that's our show. Thank you so much for watching the first installment of Nintendo News Report, and be sure to tell us everything you liked and or disliked about the show. It's in the very early stages. We want to see how it does, and your feedback would be very much appreciated. I want to thank Neil and Scott for joining me. They can be found on Twitter at NRON10, N-R-O-N, the number 10, as well as at OK Soda, in Scott's case, OK in the word soda. I can be found at C-U-L-A-F-I-A, Kulafia. Thank you so much for watching. Bye-bye.
Hey, Alex, wait. I just want to say that I have a feeling that if this camera, your camera went down a little bit, that room you're in would look a lot like a room from Saw. That's just why.
This is straight up dungeon.
Good.
Yeah, we're straight up recording. Who wants to see my victims? There?
Is that a dead body?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah.
All right, that'll be all.
Okay,
bye. Want to check stuff out on the site? We're gonna have our Game of the Year stuff up probably this time next week.
Alright, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget you can send your listener mail questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and we would love it if you rate and review the show on iTunes. It really helps get the word out. Also, we will be recording our Best Smash Brothers Music segment soon, so please submit your suggestions for best tracks from Smash Brothers games to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and don't forget to tune in to the next Nintendo News cast on YouTube on next Thursday.